You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for the Step Back and FanRack Sports, and I write for the Miami Heat's Tip Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Ramil, a credentialed NBA writer, as cover the Heat for SB Nation and AllYouCanHeat.com. I cover the NBA at large for FanSided and FanRack Sports, and you can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRamil13.
The Heat beat the Bucks on Sunday, 97-79, and have now won seven straight games. We're going to recap that game today. We're going to take some of your Twitter questions later on, then we're going to get to our spotlight players, just talking about some key performances from the game. But David, that was, I think, one of the best start-to-finish performances for the Heat this whole season. Just in particular, the ball movement was just wonderful from start to finish. I mean, there have been the Heat have been a good ball movement team all season. This is why they are right now in fourth place in the Eastern Conference. You know, without a team without an all-star is because that offense moves the ball so well. But there have been times, and in most games, there are times where the offense will still stall out. You know, when Goran Dragic goes to the bench and they're kind of without that true point guard on the floor or whatever it might be. But that wasn't necessarily the case against Milwaukee. They had 23 assists on 35 field goals. I mean, the ball just zipped around the floor. It was constantly going from swinging from one side of the court to the other. Just overall, it was, just a phenomenal ball movement game from them. And what was weird about it was that the two leading assist guys on the team were James Johnson and Bam Adebayo. James Johnson had 8 assists. Bam Adebayo had 6 assists. So basically Miami's two power forwards in the game, because mostly Bam played power forward in that game, led the Heat in ball movement, which just kind of shows you, it just sort of further illustrates what kind of offense it is that the Heat are running, where everybody is just involved in the movement of that ball and getting other guys, getting their teammates good looks. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Absolutely. Miami kind of started off a little slowly. I think, you know, the very beginning, the first few minutes of the game were difficult, as they were kind of, after a couple of days off, kind of, you know, an early Sunday morning game, Sunday afternoon game, kind of still a little rusty. And then all of a sudden to face the overall length of the Bucks lineup, you know, I think they were feeling a little daunted at first, because they were trying to find out how to get around that length. Adetokounmpo, Middleton, guys like that were really harassing our ball handlers. But they figured out, look, just keep the ball moving. They can't put that kind of direct pressure onto it, so it's not that big a deal.
I'm glad
not,
you bring that up, because that seems to be the scouting report right now, opponents against the Heat. Right. It seems like everybody in the last few games, they're starting to basically press Miami as soon as they – in Miami's backcourt, their ball handlers, as soon as they cross half court. This is a pattern. You know, this has been happening the last few games. But you're right, like the Heat, they're like, okay, well, to counter that, we're going to bring guys up closer to the ball. We're going to run circles around the defense, and we're just going to move the ball a ton. So when you try to press us, we're just going to keep zipping this ball around.
Right. And look, it plays to the strength of this roster. Again, as you pointed out, without a clear-cut all-star or a superstar on the roster, they've got to make do. And part of the strength of this team is just a lot of guys that can do a lot of things particularly well. I mean, not great, maybe not overpowering or over-dominant, but at the same time, they can move the ball. They can put the ball down if they have to. A lot of versatility, and that makes the offense, you know, free flowing when there's movement, when there's trapping and staunch defense, is long defense that you have to overcome. It makes a lot of sense just to keep the ball moving. You know, I'm concerned that maybe they feel that a guy like Dragic and Richardson as a secondary ball handler may not be skilled enough to bring the ball up court, or can turn the ball over if pressured. You know, clearly Dragic doesn't have that kind of explosive speed to just get past somebody if he's pressured enough. But I think this team, as you said, is savvy enough to understand. And a guy like James Johnson bringing the ball up, I personally like that look. I've heard others say that they don't want him bringing the ball up. I think it's fantastic for the Heat. He provides such a change of pace there. And I think he's improved as a passer throughout the course of the season. There's a lot of different options. And look, I mean, Miami, it wasn't the most aesthetically pleasing game. It seemed like it was really sluggish at some points there. And I think that plays a lot towards what Milwaukee was trying to accomplish. But Miami found a way to take advantage of that, use it to their benefit, and still come up with a really big
Up that versatility. Eric Spoelstra switched up the starting unit for this game because Milwaukee likes to play small, right? They play Giannis at the four. And so that wasn't going to work, obviously, with the starting unit that Miami has played for the entirety of the six-game win streak with Olynyk and Whiteside starting in that front court. He got away from that in this game to match up better with the smaller Milwaukee Bucks. Played James Johnson at the four, who started there. And I know we're going to talk about James Johnson a little bit more length later on, specifically about him. But, you know, it kind of gets more to that point where this is a really deep Heat team. Yes, sans all-star, but really deep, has 9 or 10 guys who could play. Derek Jones Jr. was back in Sioux Falls. He started the last two games for the Heat. You know what I mean? Like, he even played this game. So, having James...
And we should point out... Well, we should point out that it also marked the return of Justice Winslow. He came back from a few games off due to injury, played only a few minutes, and was mostly in there as a backup ball handler. But you know, had a nice 3-pointer. Took a couple of shots that he probably should have hit and missed, but he had a really nice assist also to the cutting Bam Adebayo hitting in the rim. So, you know, look, he's going to be a little rusty, but again, in short minutes, he can really maximize what his skill set is to bring the ball up and provide some nice quality defense and to facilitate on offense. And he showed those off, again, in a limited playing time. So.
We're going to get to some of your tweets next. But first, Locked On Heat still has inventory for sponsorships this season. This is a great opportunity for local South Florida businesses to connect with Heat fans. If you're unhappy with your return on investment with traditional advertising online or in print, try something new in 2018. Podcast listeners are 65% more likely to engage with advertisers. And in our experience, they're more passionate and often viewed as experts on topics, trendsetters, if you will, the exact sort of consumer most businesses want to target. Our rates are reasonable and they're based on the number of listens, so it's an efficient use of your time and money. For more information on rates and next steps, email us at lockdownheat@gmail.com and we can be talking about your company right here on the show. All right, we're going to get to some of our spotlight players later on, but let's go to Twitter for your questions you sent in using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Trevor tweets in, is this the best Hassan Whiteside has looked all season? Active and engaged defensively, not as many post-ups, and cleaning up the boards. So,
yes. Yeah. I mean, without a doubt.
absolutely. Look, you know, again, the Heat don't win this game, I don't think. Or they... I should take that back because they ended up blowing them out. But I'm not sure they win this game without Whiteside's contributions on both ends of the court.
Oh, I agree 100%. Like I said, he made things difficult for Adetokounmpo at the rim. James Johnson did a fantastic job defending him one-on-one, kind of bodying him up, using his overall size, strength, and length to make things difficult for Adetokounmpo. But funneling him towards Whiteside certainly made a difference. John Henson, their starting center, isn't much of a threat. But at the same time, Whiteside could kind of sag off him a little bit, collapse onto Adetokounmpo as he was driving to the hoop, or when a guy like Bledsoe was driving to the hoop. He finished the game with a really, really strong performance, 4 blocks. What did he have? 10 rebounds, too. He was just 15 points. Fantastic in the paint. But as far as his overall, fine.
He only took 6 shots and he made 5 of them. I mean, this is the most, this is the efficient small usage Whiteside. Yes. Small usage, but
big impact, talked about,
you know, exactly what we've been talking about on this show for a very long time. And this was it. I mean, 15 points, 10 rebounds. Those are not, I mean, that's not 25 points and 15 rebounds, you know, stat lines we've been accustomed to seeing from Whiteside here and there, but a very DeAndre Jordan like stat line, 15 and 10, you know what I mean? Only taking 6 shots, you know, getting a bunch of blocks. He had a couple of steals in the game. I mean, it was the best version of Whiteside. He didn't force anything. He was very opportunistic. Absolutely. I think there were a couple of post-ups in there, but they came in the flow of the offense. It came when there was a mismatch, when the Bucks were closing up on and pressing Miami's backcourt guys, and they just sort of zipped that ball around into the paint, and Whiteside is suddenly kind of rolling towards the rim one-on-one with one of Milwaukee's slim big men on him, and he would kind of take a drop step spin and get to the rim, and he did that a couple of times, and I thought that was...
He did it against Henson, and then Adetokounmpo came over for the double team, and he got around both of them and finished with a dunk. It was just, he was in control. But that's, I think we're starting to see a little evolution, because I don't know that that's something he would have done, a month or two ago before his injury. I think he would have taken a bad shot against Henson or gone in the opposite direction. Instead of spinning baseline where there was no other third defender, you know, he would have gone towards the inside of the paint and then maybe taken a bad shot from, say, 6-7 feet away as opposed to getting right to the rim. And this is just a great overall improvement on
it. You're right, because he kind of used to, like, predetermine sort of what he was going to do, and now he's really – maybe the game is slowing down for him ever since he was on the bench. He got to kind of – you know, with that injury, he was able to watch sort of what was going on there. I don't know what it is, but you're right. He does seem a little bit more reactive and not so – predetermining what he does offensively and defensively. I mean, holy crap. I mean, just completely shut down. Like, Milwaukee ended up outscoring Miami in the paint, but that's going to happen when they weren't shooting well from the perimeter in general, and they only scored 79 points.
A lot of that was Malcolm Brogdon, too, who was able to dominate anybody who was on him. He used his overall size and length to get past him.
Yeah, so, I mean, Milwaukee had 34 points in the paint. Miami had 32. So not a whole lot still. And Milwaukee in general only shot 31.6% from the field, and they were only 4 of 28 from three-point range. So they were going to get those
14%.
14%. Very, very bad. And that was a lot. A lot of that has to do with Miami, again, being able to – their perimeter guys being able to funnel people back to Whiteside, and Whiteside was able to do such a phenomenal job. He was minding the gap defensively. He was covering two guys at once a lot of times who were penetrating. Yeah. Again, just what you want your rim protector to do, maybe not necessarily getting a bunch of blocks, even though he got four of them. But even, like, the four blocks does not illustrate how good of a job he did just protecting the paint, because he was guarding multiple guys at the same time. He was positioned really well defensively. And offensively, he was setting great screens. And he was positioned well offensively as well, not becoming a space eater or anything like that. It was just, again, front to back, a great performance from Whiteside. The best he's had maybe all season, I would say, just maybe from a usage and an efficiency standpoint. And certainly the best he's been since returning from injury, which he's gotten better and better. You know, this is not – we said a couple of games ago that was the best game he had since returning from his injury. He's getting better. He looks really good. He only played 25 minutes in the game, by the way.
Yeah. Over this recent nine-game stretch since his return from injury, he's led the team in screen assists. You know, he's just been much more effective, much more engaged, as you know, he wrote in. It's just – look, we've talked about this. I don't know either what the difference is, whether or not, again, it was that time off, whether or not he developed a deeper understanding, or maybe he saw guys like Olynyk and Bam kind of thrive in their own right based on their versatility and their willingness to do lots of little things. But it's working. And that's, again, it feeds into what this team is particularly good at, which is just having a lot of different players step up on a nightly basis, you know, or a daily basis in today's case. Like, you know, guys like Kelly Olynyk, who has been so amazing for us over the past month or so, really struggled today, only finished with 7 points on 18 minutes. Ellington, who has been the Heat savior on so many occasions recently, finished with just 7 points, 1 of 7 from three-point range, and somehow this team was able to beat, you know, Milwaukee by almost 20 points. You're getting a lot of contributions from a lot of key players, and this is just another way that it seems like Miami might continue to do this somehow. Like, without a key, you know, superstar on the roster, they're just able to beat up guys, have guys platoon in at different times, stay fresh. Tony Fiorentino mentioned something that you and I talked about most recently, which was the team's conditioning seems to be at a higher level than everybody else's at this midway point throughout the season, and it's really starting to affect how effectively they play late in games, because I think they're fresher because you have so many guys platooning in and out, and you're already in much better shape than most of the teams in the league. That really helps. I mean, there's just no way around it.
Well, a lot of those guys, I mean, speaking of, Billy tweets in, I feel that as long as we keep Bam, Winslow, and Richardson, the Heat will have a bright future for the next decade or so. Now, I don't want to go that far, but I will say this. There was a point in that game where the Miami would start. Spo went with a lineup of Richardson, Ellington, Winslow, Bam, and Whiteside, I want to say. Or maybe it was Bam and Olynyk or something like that.
I think it was Olynyk.
And it wasn't bad. He rolled it out, and I was like, oh boy. Spo's getting crazy. He's getting weird. It wasn't bad. Look, and just in particular, that wing tandem of Justice Winslow and Josh Richardson, Rook 1 and Rook 2, they had a cadence immediately. They were switching things on the perimeter. They looked really good defensively. Again, this has been, and we talk about the offense a lot because of the way it's evolved, and it's a nice story to talk about, and it's just flat out interesting to talk about, but the defense has been basically average all season. Winslow can help a lot. Bam Adebayo playing power forward for a lot of this game, getting onto the perimeter, guarding when James Johnson was not in there. It was Bam Adebayo who was playing power forward. Justice Winslow played small forward this game. It was Bam Adebayo at times guarding Giannis and doing a fine job of it. Like, those three guys, just defensively, are that can anchor a very, very good, dangerous defense potentially going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to project the next decade, you know, we have to unfortunately put the brakes on because that's so far ahead and nobody knows what could happen between now and then. But it is a nice core, and it certainly shows off a lot of what Miami has as far as potential talent and versatility is concerned. I'm curious about your opinion on how far Bam can go, because we've seen so many nice stretches, and clearly there's still an offensive leap that he needs to take as far as expanding his range, things that you and I think he's capable of. But he can put the ball down. Obviously, he's very active as a rebounder. He's very skilled around in the painted area. What do you think Bam Adebayo ceiling is? Because I see a lot of people kind of pinning their hopes on this kid because he's so young and he's shown such incredible flashes and diligence as far as his overall work ethic and enthusiasm.
I think he could be a high level starter, and that's not a top 30 player in the NBA. I don't see him being Karl Anthony Towns, but this is a guy who offensively is.
How about this? This might be a bit of a stretch. What if he is a Blake Griffin style player?
Okay.
Like, Blake Griffin's evolution has been now to expand his range further and further, something we think Adebayo can do, but also running the point for the Clippers, especially now that Chris Paul is no longer there.
This comparison a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see why it wouldn't work. Is Blake the kind of singular superstar that you can build your team around? Maybe not. That's debatable. I think
Blake Griffin, minus that one season where he like finished third in MVP voting or whatever it was, like, that one season, like, kind of like, you know, beat up Blake Griffin is maybe Bam Adebayo, which is a good, you know, like a healthy version of the beat up Blake Griffin. Like, I think, look, that's a good one. He can put the ball on the floor. He obviously can pass, again, 6 assists tonight. He's involved in dribble handoffs a lot. Everybody, by the way, James Johnson and Bam Adebayo both tried to steal that Kelly Olynyk fake DHO blazed to the rim really quick. It didn't work so well for Bam. He didn't finish at the rim, but James Johnson actually ended up doing the fake handoff, going to the rim, and then kicking it out to Tyler Johnson for a three-pointer. But back to Bam. Yeah, I think he could be a high-level starter, and I like the Blake Griffin comparison. But the question for that is, what kind of role does a player like that play in today's and tomorrow's NBA, right? Like, there's a lot of people who believe that Blake Griffin should be playing center, you know, and the only reason he doesn't is because DeAndre Jordan is there. And that's an interesting conversation to have, and one that we can have. I mean, that's a larger conversation, and we need to get onto our next segment. But again, Bam, Winslow, Richardson, it looks good. And with Josh Richardson playing the way he has on both ends of the court lately, I was going to, you know, you can look at that Bam, Winslow, and Richardson say, well, there's no all-star there. That might be just like three really good role players. Who knows what Richardson could turn into? That's still open for discussion, and we're going to see how that plays out. But if one of them can sort of develop into that all-star type player, then you really got something there.
We should also point out Justice Winslow shooting 39% from 3-point range now. I mean, unbelievable.
Yeah, that shot looked good.
I know it's again limited attempts. Yeah, limited attempts, but still taking those shots and still shooting them at a high level. That's impressive. Now, my other concern now is, can he improve his efficiency at the rim? Because he took a couple of shots there that just looked
– He looked rusty. They did not look – I think he looked rusty.
I mean, look, no doubt about it. But that's been a problem also all season long, so – hopefully it's something that he can continue to work on over the course of the next few
games. Next, we'll spotlight our key performances of the game. But first, quick reminder, make sure you are subscribed to Locked On Heat on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. And leave us a review on iTunes. It'll help other Heat fans discover the show. Also, be sure to check out the rest of what the Locked On Podcast Network has to offer, including shows for every NBA and NFL team, plus Locked On Fantasy Basketball. The Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Okay, spotlight player time, David. Who you got?
As we like to call him, the Slovenian Steph Curry. Goran Dragic going out there, bombing for 25 points, a 9 of 17 shooting. He was Miami's maybe best player, depending on your perspective on Whiteside or not. But clearly the most productive player. Again, 25 points, 9 of 17, 4 of 6 from 3-point range, just 3 of 4 from the free throw line, but still effective overall. 3 rebounds. You know, a couple games ago, he had a huge rebounding night. Tonight, not necessary. Whiteside was there to clean up the glass, but he also finished with 2 assists, 1 steal. And again, those 3-point bombs one of which was from 29 feet as his shot clock was winding down. He just seemed so in control, so confident. You know, we've talked about whether or not he's just slowly kind of understanding that he needs to play more and better over the course of the second half of the season. We're starting to see that. We've seen that all month long. Ever since he came back from injury, I think we're starting to see this continuous evolution as the season goes on. Look, we questioned whether or not he was going to be healthy and able at the start of the season. He looked a little shaky. He looked a little good at times. And then all of a sudden he's just clicked and gotten sufficiently better over the last few games. And he's just progressing. I mean, every game we're starting to see a different aspect of him, whether it's the rebound, the passing, or in this case, the shooting. He's doing whatever it takes in order to help Miami win. And in the fourth quarter in particular, when they were kind of closing the gap a little bit, I think they had just above double digits. Goran hits those three-pointers and kind of just reminds him, look, we're not going to let this game slip through our fingers, and that was impressive.
I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, I think they got it into an 11-point game at one point, but if you're in today's NBA, that's two or three possessions away from really being a game right now, and Miami had dominated so much that second half that Goran Dragic just came out and grabbed the fourth quarter by the balls and was like, we're going to win this game, and we're going to win it easily. And that's a nice change of pace for this win streak that's happening right now because a lot of these games are sort of coming down to the end. And so while it shows that the Heat have, you know, this grittiness to them and ability to win close games, which is important, it'd be nice to just win a game. You know what I mean? And that's what happened today or happened Sunday against Milwaukee. They just won. They just won the game against a good team, against a good Milwaukee Bucks team. They just won the game. They just beat them. And that was a lot because Goran Dragic in that fourth quarter just was like, no, they're not going to get back in this thing. We're going to take this thing and we're going to extend the lead. And it was because of him. I mean, one of those shots was from like 30-foot range. I mean, it was crazy what Dragic was doing because that's not his game, like you're saying. Like, it's not his game to just sort of pull up from way beyond, you know, the three-point line and just – but he was feeling it, obviously. So,
he was.
You know, it was really great to see that sort of aggression from him. A little bit of Dion Waiters, you know, one might say.
a little confidence there. I mean, clearly he was there. Like, I mean, we tend to overlook these kinds of things for a number of reasons, but he definitely looked like he was more in control tonight than he has been in other games throughout the season. But we're starting to see, I think, you know, more and more evidence of that. And again, look, you know, at last season, it was all about him in the absence of Dwayne Wade, understanding his role in this team, becoming the team's leader. Whether he's the emotional leader of this team is kind of debatable because I think with guys like Udonis and James Johnson on there, there's always going to be, you know, there's people there who can take that leadership mantle. But Dragic leads in a different, perhaps a little bit more quiet way, and it's still very effective because I think a lot of guys see his work ethic and determination and inspires them.
He's sort of the straight man to that emotional leadership, right? He's just kind of the lead by example. He's the consistent guy, not the guy throwing water bottles in the locker room. And that's a good – that you need that.
And I wonder if his altercation with DeMar DeRozan was kind of like, look, this guy's a tough son of a bitch and maybe somebody that you take very seriously in that locker room. Like, I don't think anybody questions his toughness in that locker room.
No.
Maybe outside the league, guys who haven't played with him, they might question it because, again, he's white, Slovenian, whatever reason you might have, and they might question it. But I think in the locker room on that Heat team, they understand what he's capable of.
My spotlight player is James Johnson. Interestingly enough, look, I could go in a variety of ways. Josh Richardson, it should be noted, 16 points on 6-9 shooting, six rebounds, a really efficient game for him overall. I was really impressed with what he did on both ends of the court. We talked about Winslow's contributions in his first game back. Tyler Johnson had a nice game with 14 points on 11 shots and six rebounds, and had a nice game on both ends of the floor as well. But I wanted to take this chance to talk about James Johnson because not a good game offensively for him. Only 2 of 8 from the field. I don't think he made his first field goal attempt until the fourth quarter or something. Only had 4 points in the game. Only had 4 rebounds in the game, which doesn't look like a lot. But he had 8 assists. Again, led the team. 2 steals, 2 blocks. Only had 1 turnover. And was a, you know, despite going 2 of 8 from the field and 4 points, was a plus 15, plus minus. I mean, the Heat were better when he was on the floor. And I think a lot of that has to do with the defense he put on Giannis, which you talked about earlier. But that's the sort of thing from James Johnson that we missed when he was injured, was just being able to come in, and he doesn't necessarily need the ball to be effective. But when he has the ball, he can be very effective with it, whether it's facilitating for teammates or making some shots or whatever. Tonight, his shot wasn't falling, obviously. But defensively, he was – I mean, Spo went with him from the first minute, you know, he started James Johnson in this game to match up with Giannis, and defensively he was so good. And that combination of James Johnson and Whiteside in that front court was so strong for the Heat. Again, they don't win this game without having that. And I, you know, it just kind of sort of speaks to James Johnson's overall game and what he provides this Heat team when guys like Goran Dragic are feeling it, and Josh Richardson is feeling it, and, you know, Wayne Ellington is shooting a bunch of shots, even if he didn't necessarily make a lot. He only was 1-7 from three-point range tonight or in that game. So, again, just James Johnson sort of filling in the gaps, kind of just being that active glue guy that is so important for this Heat team.
Yeah, I didn't mind his offense. Like, you know, obviously he went 2 of 8, but overall I think he just played a pretty good game. Those shots weren't forced.
Yeah, didn't force it. Yeah, good point.
Yeah, no, he took the shots that were available, and you know, and the three-pointers in particular, you know, the ball was swinging around and he just happened to be open. I think one was with the shot clock expiring and he kind of had to hoist it. But overall, they weren't bad shots. It's just, you know, unfortunately that some of those didn't, you know, fall for him. But I don't think it was because he was expending a lot of energy on the defensive end, although he clearly was. And his impact on Adekunpo, look, Adekunpo finished with 22 points. You see this game and he scores, what is it, you know, over 25% of Milwaukee's total offensive output. But by the same token, 10 of those points came at the free throw line where he finished 10 of 10. Overall, Adekunpo looked pretty shaky, a guy who can get to the rim as easily as he could, who even took a nice jumper from about 18 feet and nailed it. He was not comfortable. He was not dominant. He wasn't able to get to the rim as effectively because, again, right. I think Johnson was just bodying him up, using his weight, strength, and speed to kind of stay with him, make things more difficult for the taller, perhaps even stronger Adekunpo. But if he was able to get past James, luckily there was Whiteside there, the active, engaged Whiteside that we're starting to see more and more of to impact Adekunpo's shots at the rim, and it really worked out.
You look at this box score and you would say, you compare Giannis and James Johnson. I mean, you're right. Giannis went 10 from the free throw line. James Johnson had 5 personal fouls in the game. You would look at the box score and be like, what are you talking about? James Johnson obviously did not have a good game. This is where the eye test comes in. I mean, if you hold Giannis to 22 points on 12 shots, that is a win. I mean, that is a win. Like, maybe not 2 years ago, but now for a guy who could easily go off for 30, 40 points on any given night, that is a win. And so
yeah, he's averaging 29 points a game. You know?
Exactly. I mean, he only took 12 shots. I mean, just getting the ball out of his hands was huge.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I'm curious to see, you know, the experiment with James Johnson starting. I wonder if that continues into Miami's next game. They face the Chicago Bulls. That's they've been playing at a pretty high level ever since the return of Nikola Mirotic. Lauri Markkanen is their starting power forward alongside Robin Lopez. That's a pretty big front court there. And they welcome back Zach LaVine as well. So some interesting matchups for Miami. I think Josh Richardson can stay with LaVine pretty easily. Mm-hmm. But the Markkanen matchup is interesting. I don't know if a guy like Kolinic can stay with him, so I'd rather have Johnson start there. But that could seem – that could lead to some early foul trouble for James Johnson. So I wonder if you go with Adebayo, you know, do something differently there. It's an interesting possibility.
We'll see how it plays out. The Heat play Chicago tonight, but we'll be back tomorrow with a recap of that game. But for now – that's all we have for today. Thank you for listening and for subscribing. You could send mailbag questions and ask about advertising by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. Tweet your questions and comments for our recaps using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.